Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, my name is Myrna West and you're listening to WFYT Blog Talk Radio, where we are 33 million listeners strong. And our guest today is Dr. Margaret McDonald, a California doctor who specializes in treating attention and learning problems in children and adults using the EEG biofeedback method. Welcome, Dr. McDonald. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I would like to start off by having you give our listeners some background information on yourself, such as training and why you chose this particular field.
Okay. Well, I graduated from medical school, more than 20 years ago already, and was a family doctor. And for some time, I also was the in-house medic for a psychiatric hospital, so I got to learn quite a bit about psychiatry. And somewhere along the line, I had a family of my own, and my son developed problems with attention deficit disorder, and I wasn't really very happy with the results that we were getting with medications and the frustrations around school and homework and all of that sort of thing. I found that the medications were something that helped the teacher more than they helped me.
Right.
And it turned out at the time, actually, to her credit, that his own doctor decided not to give him, there was a brand new medication that was out that I thought might be better because it might work 24 hours a day, but she wasn't ready to trust it yet. So I went looking for some other possible answers, and I discovered this process of being able to train the brain to work better on its own. So I began to learn about it just so that I could see if I could help my son, and it snowballed from there. Turns out that it's an incredibly fascinating field of applied clinical neuroscience, and I've managed to train myself with many of the experts in the country and had a lot of fun doing it, and eventually decided, in fact, to open my own practice to do this exclusively, so I don't do regular family practice anymore.
Oh, okay, okay. And how's your son doing now?
My son did really well, actually. I was very lucky. Not everyone does quite as well as he did, but he was a good example to get us started. He was able to stop taking his medications. If you were to meet him today, you would never know that he had ever been hyperactive. In fact, I may have gone a little too far. He's a typical lazy teenager now.
Wow.
And he's doing very well in school. So, you know, I'm certainly thrilled for the chance of having been able to give him a different sort of life anyway.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Okay, can you go into, just letting us know a little bit of what the assessment is like, the assessments that you use, and what someone can expect as far as treatment?
Well, first of all, usually when people go to a doctor and they have a complaint, the doctor takes historical information and finds out what kinds of symptoms you have and what kinds of problems you're having. And occasionally there will be tests that can be done, but when it comes to these sorts of behavioral problems, there really aren't a lot of tests that can be done that are very conclusive about what is going on. And so generally speaking, problems related to brain and behavior tend to be what we call clinical problems or clinically diagnosed problems. And doctors have a kind of a Bible they use to determine what someone's diagnosis is. It's called the DSM-4, and it basically categorizes the behavioral symptoms so that if you have this and that symptom and you've had them for a certain length of time and it's not due to some other cause, et cetera, then we are able to categorize people into different diagnostic bins. And with that, there are sort of standard approaches for how to try to manage the behaviors or perhaps prescribe medications that might affect the behaviors. So the big difference in what I would do now is that I'm really not as concerned about what the label is or necessarily what the categorical grouping of the behaviors are. What I'm really interested in is finding out why those behaviors are occurring from an organic basis, from a physiologic basis. So, for example, if a child is having trouble paying attention, It can be a simple behavioral problem. It could be that they grew up in a chaotic environment and were never practiced at being able to sustain their attention to anything. And if they have a normal brain, then given a different environment and given certain ways of teaching behavior, they're perfectly able to change that behavior. But many of these kids don't have normal brains. Their brains work differently, and they have physical reasons why it is extremely difficult for them to pay attention. So the behavior on the outside may look the same, but the cause of the behavior needs to be determined. So when we do our assessments, we're assessing various functions of the brain to see which areas are having a problem. Obviously, we do need to assess behaviors and take lots of history, get to know what's going on with that child. But the biggest difference in my evaluation would be that I actually will look at the brain itself and how it's functioning. So I do a special form of an EEG, or an electroencephalograph, which examines the brainwave activity. And we are able to digitally analyze it and compare it to databases of people who don't have problems. And that helps us to see which areas of the brain are acting differently. And quite often there is a correlation between those areas that are acting differently and the kinds of functions that those areas are supposed to perform. And that's how we are able to figure out why someone is having the problem they're having.
Oh, okay. And then that lead into the next question I was going to ask, which is, many people say, well, you know, my child doesn't have a problem. My child is normal. How would they be able to know what exactly normal is? But as you mentioned, that you go through a couple of steps, in fact, a lot of steps, just to make sure that you're able to say exactly if it's just behavioral or if there is something really going on. So that's great. Now,
right.
if a parent believes that their child may have a learning disorder and they don't know, you know, what to do, what steps do they need to take in order to make sure their child receives the help that they need?
Well, certainly discussions with the teacher are important. Teachers are very observant about what kinds of issues kids are having. And if there seems to be a weakness in a particular area, then generally there's an evaluation of some sort that can occur at the school level. Quite frequently, schools will have access to psychologists who can do various tests and narrow down which areas this particular child is having a problem with. For example, some kids have problems exclusively with reading, or perhaps just dyslexia, or perhaps with math. And even in the area of a math learning problem, that can be broken down into two areas as well. For example, you might have trouble with logical sequential processing things like arithmetic, and that would generally involve more the left side of the head, or you might have a real problem with the visual or the conceptual side of things, like, for example, figuring out how to solve a word problem, and that often is reflective of problems on the right side of the brain. So different parts of the brain contribute in different ways to these skills. So a school assessment is very valuable, and beyond that, there is also very detailed neuropsychological testing that can be done. But our tests will turn up the generalizations of these kinds of problems, and if we want to pinpoint them further, then I will often refer people also for these further educational or neuropsychological evaluations as well.
Oh, okay, okay. And for parents out there who feel their child has a learning disorder and they feel that they did something wrong, or that's a myth that I know a lot of parents feel, as I would. Is there something that you can tell us to help parents, or any advice you can give them whose child may have been diagnosed with a learning disorder?
Well, yeah, that's a big question. We know that a lot of these problems are partly genetic. We know that they can be influenced by various events that can occur during development, many of which are not something anybody can necessarily control. For example, if a child happens to have had a severe illness as a young baby, it's possible that that may affect them if their brain is already in a state where they're perhaps a little on the fragile side due to their genetics. Nutrition can play a role. Habits such as exercise and feeding yourself properly and sleeping well enough can play a role. The learning environment in the home can play a role. Quite frequently, though, these things are mostly genetically determined, and it's really not the parent's fault.
Right.
And if any of the other environmental, nutritional, or other factors can be modified, we will work on those. And they sometimes do have quite a remarkable effect, actually. But the brain gets wired as it gets wired one way or another in those early years.
Right.
And if that isn't an optimal wiring, then there's not a whole lot that just a change in parenting can necessarily do.
Right.
Sometimes it does require either a nudging of the physiology with a medication or with a retraining of how that wiring is working.
Okay. Now, what types of treatments do you have? In other words, what type of brain problems are you treating? I know you said ADHD. Is there others that, parents can go
right.
to help with?
Right. ADHD is the most common thing that we see.
Right.
A lot of the original research with this technique was done actually with epilepsy and then ADHD after that. So the best evidence that we have in the research to date would support the usefulness of this technique for controlling epilepsy and for helping attention deficit disorder and hyperactivity. But the thing is that if you look at how it works and why it works, there isn't any reason why it couldn't be applied to almost any problem, as long as there is a correlation between a dysfunction we find in the physiologic activity of the brain versus the behavior that is being displayed.
Okay.
So, for example, it can be helpful also in anxiety or depression. There are certain types of chronic pain where the brain has rewired itself to become more sensitive to pain. That can sometimes be helped. Even in the area of addictions, there has been some success, although that's not personally my big area.
Right.
There are people with learning disorders, as we said, who, though they are a little trickier and sometimes more difficult and require more work, but they are also movable in the same kind of way of trying to train the brain to work in a different way.
Okay. And for our listeners who just might be joining on, we thank you for joining, and you're listening to WFYT Blog Talk Radio. We're speaking with Dr. Margaret McDonald, a California doctor who specializes in treating attention and learning problems in children and adults, and she does this by using the EEG biofeedback method. Can you supply us, Dr. McDonald, with your contact information along with your website so our listeners could join on?
Certainly. I am in the Santa Clarita area north of Los Angeles. My office phone number is 661-259-0739. I also work part-time in the San Jose, San Francisco Bay Area. The number there is 408-876-4510. And the website is www.mindconnection.com. So that's mind as in M-I-N-D, -connection.com.
Okay. And once our listeners join your website, what can they expect to find on the website that would be helpful to them?
Well, there is lots of general information about what this is. There are frequently asked questions, which answer quite a few basics about what is this, how does it compare with behavioral training or with medication, how does it basically work, what does the process look like, how long does it take, that sort of thing. There are links to other websites where you can see a lot of information about research that has been done. There are some news pieces that have been done on us. There's a way to contact me. There's even a way to make an appointment. There's some information about free seminars that I have once a month in case people want to come and hear more and meet me and see what this is all about.
Okay.
When people come to a free seminar, they will get a free consultation, a 30-minute consultation with me privately. So in the seminar, we will talk about general things, but I try not to talk about anyone's personal information.
Right.
So after that, if they want to get a short consultation to find out if this might be something that would be appropriate for them, then that's arrangeable after the seminar.
Okay, so they just need to check the website to find out when the next seminar would be, right?
Right.
Upcoming seminars. Okay. And how does this EEG biofeedback, how are physicians reacting to it? Are they taking it well, or have you had any feedback from that department?
Well, I think as with anything new, it depends obviously on who you talk to and what they've already heard. There are different opinions out there, and there are good reasons for that, so I'll explain about that in a minute. But basically, many of them are open to the idea. The information about it is becoming a little bit more known. This process was mostly developed in the world of psychology, experimental psychology, and neuroscience. And so because it didn't come straight out of a medical school research program, I think that other doctors are, number one, less likely to hear about it, and number two, perhaps a little less likely to trust the information because they tend to be a little picky about where they get their information. Unfortunately, it's a kind of a thing that you really do need to know a fair bit about in order to understand it. And if someone doesn't understand something, it's easy for them to perhaps write it off. So the other problem I think that is out there is that it's not really a controlled activity. So there are some people who are doing it who are not medical people, they're not psychologists, they're not clinically trained. They, you know, they've learned a little bit about what the computer can do and how this sort of works, and they're offering themselves as being able to help people, but unfortunately I don't think that they're doing the field a lot of favors that way necessarily. So I think that the public needs to be aware that it is very much a buyer beware situation, and you would absolutely want to make sure that you check out the person you would go to, and you would want to make sure they are qualified and that they're able to handle the problem that you have.
Right.
If it is a medical problem, then it should be handled by a medically trained person.
Right. Okay. And I read on your website about a very interesting project that you're doing in Asia also. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. There was a man who started a company there who was originally training with me, and we realized that some of what we do is not, you don't have to just use it on kids with ADD. Even if you have a so-called normal brain, you can still use this technique to improve your brain function. So you can improve your ability to focus, you can improve your memory, you can improve your ability to stay calm and relaxed and still be able to focus during stressful times. And this has been used already in athletes. For example, Avinash Bindra was the guy who won the gold medal for shooting at the Olympics last year, and he was from India. And he used these techniques extensively to help himself train how to stay in the zone. A couple of years back, the Italian soccer team won the World Cup, and they had used these techniques in something called the Mind Room in AC Milan in Italy. And they were better able to control their own mental function, their stress levels, and their focus. And that gave them an edge. And so in these stressful economic times, a lot of business executives are trying to stay on top and trying not to be handicapped by the stress. And so if they can find ways to manage their stress better by being able to control their own functions and maintain their mental focus, then they will probably have an edge in their workplace.
Okay. Now, I noticed that you mentioned that you also you treat children as well as adults. ADHD in adults, is it harder for an adult to detect whether or not they have ADHD? And how is it that you're able to detect that in an adult? I mean, the children, we normally look for hyperactivity and things of that sort. But what are the signs when it comes to adults?
A lot of the adults, they've sort of grown out of the hyperactivity. So then it doesn't look as obvious, you're right. But generally, the attention problems have persisted to an extent. A significant number of kids who have attention deficit disorder continue to have problems in adult life, and it is becoming more publicized now. I think more people are noticing, and you can get lots of little questionnaires out on the web to find out if you think you have a problem. But certainly the people that I see have noticed that they change jobs frequently, they may have difficulty being distracted and getting their work done on time, and they're spending a lot more time than their peers to try and get their work done, or they are making careless mistakes, or they are having trouble in their relationships, or they are more likely perhaps to get into trouble with traffic tickets or speeding tickets because they weren't paying attention, or they are impulsive and perhaps they're having problems with abuse of drugs or just doing things that they would wish that they would be able to control themselves better. And so the general life of a person who is an adult with ADD tends to be just that much less sort of stable and on track. And
right.
That's when people begin to ask themselves questions. The oldest patient I've had so far was a 64-year-old woman who'd had ADD
wow.
all her life. And she didn't really recognize it until she was in her 50s. And she had begun a master's program, oh, maybe 15 years ago and never finished it. But she had a pretty good job, but she was still working at that age because she couldn't afford to retire yet. So she did this program, and she was very thrilled, and she actually went back and finished her master's. So she was very happy.
Wow.
So it's never too old. You're never
yeah.
too old. Yeah,
and she never knew she had it, huh? Wow.
Well, yeah. So, you know, it can be a real awakening for some adults. They go through a whole process where they recognize, wow, it's not just my fault. It's not just a personality flaw. I really have this difference in my brain that explains why I am the way I am. And it can be very enlightening for people to understand that. And then especially when they have something they can do about it, it's very empowering.
Right. Right. And also notice that your method also treats epilepsy. Is that correct? Or
yes, the original research that discovered this field was done with epilepsy. It was actually done in cats, believe it or not. So, some people ask whether this is just a placebo effect, but I think that if you look at the original cat research, it might be difficult to think that was just a placebo effect. The original researcher actually had been studying a toxic agent that normally caused seizures. And prior to that, he had just been fooling around and decided to see if he could train cats to change their EEG activity at will. And he
right.
did manage to do that, but nobody understood what that was good for. And only later, when he was noticing that some of his cats were not getting seizures easily from this toxin, and he was able to make the connection that those had been the cats that he had trained to
right.
stabilize their brains better. And so it kind of started there with the application to epilepsy. Some of the studies that were done back in the 70s that you can't even do these kinds of studies anymore were what were called ABA designs. So
right.
they did training to make the person better. They had less seizures. Then they reversed the training, and they made them worse again. And then they reversed the training again, and they made them better again. So this is a very high level of cause and effect kind of research, which
okay.
the ethics committees won't let us do these days. But
right.
Yeah.
And I know through talking to you previously, you mentioned that you have testimonials or examples of how these methods have worked. I know you mentioned the older lady, and you said she was 64, right?
Yes.
When she was able to find help for her ADHD, do you have any others that, would be a great example so that maybe someone listening could say, there's still hope for me, or I can do that?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that's interesting, I have one that I could perhaps read a piece from, but one of the things that's interesting is certainly I can say that, we can show improvements on tests of attention, and we can show that they're doing a little better in school, and they can get down in their dose of medication, or sometimes they can even get off of their medication. And that all sounds great, but it's the little things that matter to parents. And having been a mother of a kid, I certainly appreciate what those things are. And so, for example, here's one, and the names are changed, of course, but it's talking about a boy named John, who was 13 at the time. And it said here that, before neurofeedback, this is John's mom. Before neurofeedback, just getting John up in the morning and out the door on time was a struggle every single day. Homework was like torture for us both. I would have to redirect him every minute or so, and what should have taken 20 minutes would take 2 hours. And I think if there's any parent out there right now with an ADD kid, they know exactly what we're talking about. I felt like I was constantly nagging him and being negative, all the while feeling stressed out with no time to get my own things done. Now, and she means since biofeedback, Life at home is much easier. He still requires more intensive parenting than other kids, but I can trust him to get done what I ask him to do without 14 reminders. I get to sleep an extra half hour now that he can get himself ready so much more easily in the mornings. That's pretty valuable to a parent.
Yeah.
Homework gets done without a fuss, even late in the evening when his medication has worn off. She wrote this before we were completely finished, so he hadn't got completely off his meds at this time. His handwriting is much better. His grades have come up from C's and D's to A's and B's. His teachers this year can hardly believe that he even has ADHD, and they tell us he's a pleasure to have in class. At home, we have time to enjoy each other's company. So, you know, it's that kind of a thing, I think, that is reflective of an overall change in function of that brain, because a medication can help you to focus and sit still, but it's only going to work for the number of hours that it's in your bloodstream. Right. Whereas if your entire brain is getting better and better at regulating yourself and paying attention, then your entire interaction with the world begins to change. And you begin to regulate yourself as an individual on a more you could say more mature basis, because it's often a big factor with these kids. They don't appear to be as mature as their peers. Another thing I can tell you from a conference presentation of a couple of psychologists who've been doing this for a long time, they did a long-term follow-up with many of their patients, and they interviewed these people who were now in their 20s. And one of the things that they commented on that they thought was really amazing was that none of these young adults had any memory of themselves as having been a kid with a problem.
Right.
So they were able to reframe their own self-image from a time when they became more functional. And that's a really heartwarming thing for a parent to know.
Right, right. And I noticed on your website you also mentioned that biofeedback can often reduce or eliminate the need for medication in the longer term. So it's important, you know, for parents to know that their child might still have need for some medication. It probably won't be an immediately eliminating of everything. Is that correct?
Yes. We absolutely can't guarantee any results, obviously. But the same, if you have a strep throat, you can go and get the penicillin and it might not cure your strep throat either. So while there are no guarantees, there are certainly generalized improvements, but not everyone will necessarily become completely normal. It just depends on how long you work at it and a lot of other factors. So there are certainly some people who may still need some help, but being able to reduce dose is always useful, of course. And unfortunately, the latest long-term follow-up of the very large MTA study of medication for methylphenidate and stimulants did show that after 2 to 3 years, most of the people who even were on medications weren't really benefiting much anymore. So medications really are not a lifetime solution. They're a short-term solution.
Right.
So I'm hoping that these techniques will be more available in the future and will become more the norm.
Okay. Now, as far as neurofeedback is concerned, in the EEG biofeedback method, can you just explain to us what would happen when a parent brings their child in for that type of process?
Well, it's basically a learning process, just like you can teach a rat how to press a bar and get a reward of a piece of food. What we do is we hook the person up to a computer that can read what the brainwaves are doing, and we have programmed the computer to look for certain patterns. So in the beginning, every time that brain spontaneously makes that different pattern, the computer will do something that basically says, ah, that was it, do that again. And it makes an animation move, or it gives a sound or a reward of some kind, and that is like a reward for the brain. And anytime you reward a behavior, that behavior becomes more frequent. That's just a typical learning sort of paradigm. And so it's a matter of setting up the process so that with lots of trial and error practice, that part of the brain learns how to make that different pattern more and more easily. And as that happens, the external behavioral functioning of that part of the brain begins to improve as well.
Okay. Now, we know that stress is normal, it's a part of everyday life. But how does this method help as far as stress management is concerned?
One of the biggest things is that stress appears in our bodies in so many ways. There are so many connections between the brain and the body, but we're mostly not aware of them. So one of the big things that biofeedback can do is essentially give you some really cool mirrors so that you can begin to appreciate better how every thought you have is affecting your body. And once you can see that, then you can begin to modify it.
Okay. Now, as we are wrapping up, I want to, for our listeners who are joining us and may have missed the contact information in the beginning, I want to make sure they have another chance to hear it and come to your website, because your website is so informative. I know I went through it and I stayed on it for a while. You have really great information on there. Can you give us those contact information again?
Okay, so the website again is www.mindconnection.com, MIND-connection.com. And phone numbers are 408-876-4510 and 661-259-0739.
Okay, and you said that if a parent out there might be not sure if they want to go this method, they can also join a free seminar that you would have upcoming, and the seminar dates
are correct.
On the website.
That'll be just obviously for people who are local to here, but the dates for those should be posted on the website.
Okay. And what is the turnaround time as far as how soon can you see a parent if they're looking for information? Is there a long process that needs to happen? I know you said there's many things, forms that need to be filled out.
Well, as of today, the next free seminar would be May the 13th. I do need to post that on the website, I see. And appointments right now can be had that same week from now. If they were booking now, they would be able to get in the middle of May.
Okay.
There are history forms that will get filled out beforehand. That all happens online.
Okay.
And as I mentioned, people who attend the seminars do get a free 30-minute consultation.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dr. McDonald. I really enjoyed our discussion today. It's very informative. And like I mentioned, I think you're doing a wonderful job and a great service. And I'm very happy, you know, that you were able to find this method for your son. That you know, that to me is the biggest testimony that you can possibly give. And for our guests, we thank you so much for listening to WFYT Blog Talk Radio. And we hope to hear from you soon.
Thank you so much, Myrna.
Thank you.